I think Celeste has picked something avian as well. She seemed awfully determined, he said. That's all right, I replied with a shrug. I'm not crazy about feathers anyway. My smile faltered. Wait, you were with Celeste? He nodded.
Just a quick visit to chat. I'm afraid I can't stay long here either. Father's not thrilled about all this. But with the selection going on, he understood that it would be nice to have some more festivities. And he agreed it would be a much better way to meet the families, all things considered.
Like what?
He's eager for an elimination, and I'm supposed to do one after I meet with everyone's parents. The sooner they come, the better in his eyes.
I hadn't realized sending someone home was part of the Halloween plan. I thought it was just a big party. It made me nervous, though I told myself there was no reason I should be, not after our conversation last night. Of all the moments I'd shared with Maxon, nothing seemed quite so real as that one. Still scanning the designs, he spoke absent-mindedly.
I suppose I ought to finish my rounds.
You're leaving already?
Not to worry, darling. I'll see you at dinner.
Yes, I thought, but you'll see all of us at dinner. Is everything all right? I asked.
Of course, he answered, offering me a quick kiss on the cheek. I have to run. We'll talk again soon.
And just as suddenly as he appeared, he was gone. As of Sunday, the Halloween party was 8 days away, which meant the palace was a hurricane of activity. On Monday, the elite spent the morning with Queen Amberlee taste-testing and approving a menu for the party. It was easily the best task we'd been given so far. That afternoon, however, Celeste was missing from the women's room for a few hours. When she returned around 4, she announced to us all, "Maxon sends his love." Tuesday afternoon, we greeted extended members of the royal family who were coming to town for the festivities. But that morning, we all watched out the window as Maxon gave Chris an archery lesson in the gardens. Meals were full of guests who had come to stay early, but Maxon was often missing, as well as Marley and Natalie. I felt more and more embarrassed. I'd made a mistake by confessing my feelings to Maxon. For all his talk, he couldn't really be interested in me if his first instinct was to spend time with everyone else. I'd all but lost hope by Friday when I found myself sitting at the piano in my room after the report, wishing that Maxon would come. He didn't. I tried to put it out of my mind on Saturday, as the elite were obligated to entertain the influx of ladies at the palace in the women's room in the morning and have yet another dance rehearsal in the afternoon. Thank goodness our family chose to focus on music and art as fives, because I was a terrible dancer. The only person in the room worse than me was Natalie. Obnoxiously enough, Celeste was the epitome of gracefulness. More than once, the instructors asked her to help others in the room, the result of which was Natalie nearly twisting her ankle because of Celeste's intentionally poor guidance. Smooth as a snake, Celeste faulted Natalie's two left feet for her problems. The teachers believed her, and Natalie laughed it all off. I admired Natalie for not letting Celeste get to her. Aspen had been there for all the lessons. The first few times I avoided him, not really sure I wanted to interact with him. I heard rumors that the guards were switching schedules so fast it was dizzying. Some wanted to go to the party desperately, while others had girls back home and would be in huge trouble if they were seen dancing with someone else, especially since 5 of us would be eligible again soon and in very high demand. But seeing as this was our last formal rehearsal, when Aspen was near enough to offer me a dance, I didn't turn him down.
Are you all right? He asked. You've seemed down the last few times I've seen you.
Just tired, I lied. I couldn't talk with him about boy problems.
Really?
He asked doubtfully. I was sure that it meant bad news was coming. What do you mean? Did he know something I didn't? He sighed.
If you're preparing to tell me that I need to stop fighting for you, that's not a conversation I want to have.
In truth, I hadn't even thought about Aspen in the last week or so. I was so consumed by my mistimed words and mistaken guesses, I couldn't consider anything else. And here, while I'd been worried about Maxon letting me go, Aspen had been worried about me doing the same to him. That's not what it is,
I answered vaguely, feeling guilty. He nodded, satisfied with that response for now.
Ouch.
Oops, I said. I genuinely hadn't meant to step on him. I worked to focus a little more on the dancing.
I'm sorry, Mare, but you're terrible.
He was chuckling, even though the heel of my shoe had to have hurt him. I know, I said breathlessly. I'm trying, I swear. I pranced around the room like a blind moose, but what I lacked in grace I made up for in effort. Aspen kindly did his best to make me look good, attempting to be a little less on the beat to be in time with me. That was so typical of him, always trying to be my hero. By the end of that last lesson, I at least knew all the steps. I couldn't promise I wouldn't accidentally take out a visiting diplomat with an energetic kick of my leg, but I'd do my best. As I considered that image, I realized it was no wonder Maxim was having second thoughts. I'd be an embarrassment to take to another country, let alone receive anyone here. I just didn't have that princess air about me. I sighed and went to get a cup of water. Aspen followed me while the rest of the girls left.
So,
he started. I did a sweep of the room to make sure no one was watching.
I have to assume that if you're not worried about me, you're worried about him.
I lowered my eyes and blushed. How well he knew me.
Not that I'm cheering for him or anything, but if he can't see how amazing you are, he's an idiot.
I smiled, continuing to study the floor.
And if you don't get to be princess then, so what? That doesn't make you any less incredible.
And you know...
You know.
He couldn't get out what he wanted to say, and I risked looking at his face. In Aspen's eyes, I saw a thousand different endings to that sentence, all of them connecting him to me. That he was still waiting for me, that he knew me better than anyone, that we were the same, that a few months at the palace couldn't erase 2 years. No matter what, Aspen would always be there for me. I know Aspen. I do. Chapter 7. I stood in line with the other girls in the massive foyer of the palace, bouncing on the balls of my feet. Lady America, Sylvia whispered, and that was all it took to know I was behaving in an unacceptable way. As our main tutor for the selection, she took our actions quite personally. I tried to still myself. I envied Sylvia and the staff and the handful of guards who were moving around the space, if only for the fact that they were allowed to walk. If I could do the same, I knew I'd feel much calmer. Maybe if Maxim was here already, it wouldn't be so bad. Then again, maybe it would make me more anxious. I still couldn't figure out why, after everything, he hadn't made any time for me lately.
They're here, I heard through the palace doors.
I wasn't the only one who made sounds of delight.
All right, ladies, Sylvia called. Best behavior. Butlers and maids against the wall, please.
We tried to be the lovely, regal young women Sylvia wanted us to, but the second Chris's and Marley's parents made it through the doorway, it all fell apart. I knew that both girls were only children, and it was obvious their parents missed them too much to bother with decorum. They ran in, screaming, and Marley dashed out of the line without so much as a pause. Celeste's parents were more put together, though they clearly were thrilled to see their daughter. She broke rank as well, but in a much more civilized way than Marley. I didn't even register Natalie's or Elise's parents, because a short figure with wild red hair blazed around the open door, her eyes searching.
May!
She heard my call and saw my waving arm and rushed to me, Mom and Dad following her lead. I knelt on the floor, embracing her.
Ames, I can't believe it, she crooned, admiration and jealousy in her voice. You look so, so beautiful.
I couldn't speak. I could barely even see her. I was crying so much. A moment later, I felt the steady arms of my father taking us both in. Then Mom, abandoning her usual propriety, joined us, and we all held one another in a heap on the palace floor. I heard a sigh that I knew was Sylvia's, but I really didn't care at the moment. Once I could breathe again, I spoke.
I'm so happy you guys are here.
We are too, kitten, Dad said. Can't even tell you how much we missed you.
I felt his kiss on the back of my head. I twisted so I could hug him better. I didn't know until this very moment how badly I had needed to see them. I reached for Mom last. I was shocked that she was so quiet. I couldn't believe she hadn't already demanded a detailed report of my progress with Maxon. But when I pulled back, I noticed the tears in her eyes.
You're so beautiful, sweetheart. You look like a princess.
I smiled. It was nice not to have her question or instruct me for once. She was just happy in the moment, and that meant the world to me, because I was too. I noticed May's eyes focus on something over my shoulder.
That's him, she breathed.
Hmm? I asked, looking down at her. I turned to see Maxon watching us from behind the grand stairwell. His smile was amused as he made his way to where we were huddled on the floor. My father stood immediately.
Your Highness, he said,
his voice full of admiration. Maxon walked up to him, hand outstretched.
Mr. Singer, it's an honor. I've heard so much about you. And you too, Mrs. Singer.
He moved to my mother, who had also risen and straightened her hair.
Your Majesty, she squeaked, a little starstruck. Sorry about all that.
She motioned to the floor as May and I stood, still holding each other tightly. Maxon chuckled.
Not at all. I'd expect no less enthusiasm from anyone related to Lady America.
I was sure Mom would want an explanation for that later.
And you must be May.
May blushed as she extended her hand, expecting a shake but getting a kiss.
I never did get to thank you for not crying.
What?
She asked, blushing even more in her confusion.
No one told you?
Maxon asked brightly.
You won me my first date with your lovely sister here. I'll be forever in your debt.
May giggled back.
Well, you're welcome, I guess.
Maxon put his hands behind his back, his education coming back to him.
I'm afraid I must meet the others, but please stay here for a moment. I'll be making a short announcement to the group, and I am hoping to get to speak with you more very soon. So glad you could come.
He's even cuter in person, May whispered loudly, and I could tell by the slight shake of his head that Maxon had heard.
He went off to Elise's family, who were easily the most refined of the group. Her older brothers looked as rigid as the guards, and her parents bowed to Maxon as he approached. I wondered if Elise had told them to do that, or if that was just who they were. They all looked so polished, with matching heads of jet black hair topping their small, smartly dressed frames. Beside them, Natalie and her very pretty younger sister were whispering to Chris as their parents shook hands. The whole space was full of a warm energy. What does he mean, he expected enthusiasm from us? Mom demanded in a low whisper. Is this because you yelled at him when you met? You haven't been doing that again, have you? I sighed. Actually, Mom, we argue pretty regularly.
What?
She gaped at me.
Well, stop it.
Oh, and I kneed him in the groin once. There was a split second of silence before May barked a laugh. She covered her mouth and tried to stop, but it kept coming out in awkward, squeaky sounds. Dad's lips were pressed together, but I could tell he was on the verge of losing it himself. Mom was paler than snow.
America, tell me you're joking. Tell me you didn't assault the prince.
I didn't know why, but the word assault pushed us all over the edge, and May, Dad, and I bent over laughing as Mom stared at us.
Sorry, Mom, I managed.
Oh, good Lord. She suddenly seemed very excited to meet Marley's parents, and I didn't stop her from going.
So, he enjoys a girl who stands up to him,
Dad said once we all calmed down. I like him more already. Dad looked around the room, taking in the palace, and I stood there, trying to absorb his words. How many times in the years Aspen and I had been dating in secret had he and my father been in the same room? A dozen at least, maybe more. And I'd never really worried about him approving of Aspen. I knew getting him to consent to me marrying down a caste would be hard, but I had always assumed I'd get his permission in the end. For some reason, this felt 1,000 times more stressful. Even with Maxon being a one, with him being able to provide for the lot of us, I was suddenly aware that there was a chance my dad might not like him. Dad wasn't a rebel, out burning houses or anything, but I knew he was unhappy with the way things were run. What if his issues with the government extended to Maxon? What if he said I shouldn't be with him? Before I could go too far down that path of thought, Maxon bounded up a few of the steps so he could see all of us.
I want to thank you again for coming. We're so pleased to have you at the palace, not only to celebrate the first Halloween in Ilia in decades, but so that we can get to know all of you. I'm sorry my parents weren't able to greet you as well. You will meet them very soon. The mothers, sisters, and elite are invited to have tea with my mother this afternoon in the women's room. Your daughters will be able to escort you there. And the gentlemen will be having cigars with my father and myself. We'll have a butler come for you, so no worries about getting lost. Your maids will escort you to the rooms you'll use for the duration of your stay, and they will get you properly suited for your visit, as well as for the celebration tomorrow night.
He gave us all a quick wave and went on his way. Almost immediately, a maid was at our side.
Mr. and Mrs. Singer, I'm here to escort you and your daughter to your quarters.
But I want to stay with America,
May protested. Sweetie, I'm sure the king gave us a room every bit as nice as America's. Don't you want to see it? My mother encouraged. May turned to me.
I want to live exactly how you live, just for a little while. Can't I stay with you?
I sighed. So I'd have to forego some privacy for a few days, so what? There was no way I could say no to that face. Fine, maybe with two of us, my maids will actually have something to do. She hugged me so tightly it was instantly worth it.
What else have you learned?
Dad asked. I looped my arm through his, still getting used to him in a suit. If I hadn't seen Dad 1,000 times in his dirty paint clothes, I would have sworn he was born to be a one. He looked so young and smart in the formal outfit. He even seemed taller. I think I told you everything we were taught about our history, how President Wallace was the last leader of what was the United States, and then he led the American state of China. I didn't know about him at all, did you? Dad nodded.
Your grandpa told me about him. I heard he was a decent guy, but there wasn't much he could do when things got as bad as they did.
I'd only learned the solid truth of the history of Ilia since I'd been at the palace. For some reason, the story of our country's origin was mostly passed on orally. I'd heard several things, and none of them was as complete as the education I'd received in the last few months. The United States was invaded at the beginning of the Third World War, after they couldn't repay their crippling debt to China. Instead of getting money, which the United States didn't have, the Chinese set up a government here, creating the American state of China and using the Americans as labor. Eventually, the United States rebelled, not only against China, but also against the Russians, who were trying to steal the labor force set up by the Chinese, joining with Canada, Mexico, and several other Latin countries to form one country. That was the Fourth World War, and while we survived it, became a new country because of it, it was pretty economically devastating. Maxon told me that right before the Fourth World War, people hardly had anything.
He's right. It's part of why the caste system is so unfair. No one had much to offer in the way of help in the first place, which is why so many people ended up in the lower castes.
I didn't really want to go down this path with Dad, because I knew he would get really worked up. He wasn't wrong. The castes weren't fair, but this was a happy visit, and I didn't want to waste it talking about things we couldn't change. Besides the little history, it's mostly etiquette lessons. We're getting a bit more into diplomacy now. I think we might have to do something with that soon. They're pushing it so hard. The girls who stay will have to anyway.
Who stay?
It turns out one girl will be going home with her family. Maxon's supposed to make an elimination after meeting you all.
You sound unhappy. Do you think he'll send you home?
I shrugged.
Come on now. You must know if he likes you or not by this point. If he does, you have nothing to worry about. If he doesn't, why would you even want to stay?
I guess you're right. He stopped walking.
So, which is it?
This was kind of embarrassing to talk about with my dad, but I wouldn't have talked about it with Mom either.
and May would be worse at interpreting Maxon than I was.
I think he likes me. He says he does.
Dad laughed. Then I'm sure you're doing fine.
But he's been a little distant this last week.
America, honey, he's the prince. He's probably been busy passing legislation or something like that.
I didn't know how to explain that Maxon seemed to be making time for everyone else. It was too humiliating. I guess.
Speaking of legislation, have you all learned anything about that yet? How to write up proposals?
I wasn't any more excited about this topic, but at least it was boy-free. Not yet. We've been reading a lot of them, though. They're hard to understand sometimes. But Sylvia, the woman from downstairs, she's sort of a guide or tutor or whatever. She tries to explain things, and Maxon is helpful if I ask him questions.
Is he?
Dad seemed happy about this.
Oh, yes. I think it's important to him that we all feel like we could be successful, you know? So he's really great about explaining things. He even...
I deliberated. I wasn't supposed to mention the book room, but this was my dad.
Listen, you have to promise not to say anything about this.
He chuckled.
The only person I ever talked to is your mother, and we all know she can't be trusted with a secret, so I promise I won't tell her.
I giggled. Trying to imagine Mom keeping anything to herself was impossible.
You can trust me, kitten,
he said, giving me a little side hug.
There's a room, a secret room, and it's full of books, Dad,
I confessed quietly, double-checking to make sure no one was around. There are books that are banned and these maps of the world, old ones with all the countries like they used to look. Dad, I didn't know there used to be that many. And there's a computer in there. Have you ever seen one in real life?
He shook his head, stunned.
It's amazing. You type what you're looking for, and it searches through all the books in the room and finds it.
How?
I don't know, but that's how Maxon found out what Halloween was. He even...
I looked up and down the hall again. I decided there was no way Dad would tell about the library, but if I told him I had one of those secret books in my room, it might be too much.
He even...
He let me borrow one once, just to see.
Oh, that's very interesting. What did you read? Can you tell me?
I bit my lip. It was one of Gregory Ilias' personal diaries. Dad's mouth dropped open before he composed himself.
America? That's incredible. What did it say?
Oh, I haven't finished. Mostly it was to figure out what Halloween was. He considered my words for a moment and shook his head.
Why are you worried, America? Clearly Maxon trusts you.
I sighed, feeling foolish. I guess you're right.
Amazing,
he breathed.
So there's a hidden wall around here somewhere.
He looked at the walls in a whole new way. Dad, this place is crazy. There are doors and panels everywhere. For all I know, if I tipped this vase, we might fall through a trapdoor.
He said, amused. I'll be very careful making my way back to my room, then.
Which you should probably do soon. I need to get May ready for tea with the Queen.
Ah, yes, you and your teas with the Queen, he joked. All right, kitten, I'll see you tonight for dinner. Now, how best not to fall into a secret hatch?
He wondered aloud, spreading his arms out like a protective shield as he walked. Once he got to the stairwell, he tentatively put his hand on the rail.
Just so you know, this is safe.
Thanks, Dad. I shook my head and made my way back to my room. It was difficult not to skip down the halls. I was so happy my family was here I could hardly stand it. If Maxon didn't send me home, it was going to be harder than ever to be separated from them. I rounded the corner to my room and saw that the door was open.
What did he look like? I heard May ask as I approached.
Handsome. To me, anyway. His hair was kind of wavy and it never stayed down. May giggled and so did Lucy as she spoke.
A few times I actually got to run my fingers through it. I think of that sometimes. Not as much as I used to.
I tiptoed closer, not wanting to disturb them.
Do you still miss him?
May asked, curious about boys as always.
Less and less, Lucy admitted,
a tiny lilt of hope in her voice. When I got here, I thought I would die from the ache. I kept dreaming up ways to escape the palace and get back to him, but that would never really happen. I couldn't leave my dad, and even if I got outside the walls, there's no way I could have found my way back.
I knew a little about Lucy's past, how her family gave themselves as servants to a family of threes in exchange for the money to pay for an operation for Lucy's mother. Lucy's mom eventually died, and when the mother found out her son was in love with Lucy, she sold Lucy and her father to the palace. I peeked through the door to find May and Lucy on the bed. The balcony doors were open, and the delicious Angelus air wafted in. May fell into the palace look so naturally, her day dress hanging perfectly on her frame as she sat braiding parts of Lucy's hair back and letting the rest fall free. I'd never seen Lucy without her hair pulled up tight into a bun. She looked lovely like this, young and carefree.
"What's it like to be in love?" May asked.
Part of me ached. Why hadn't she ever asked me? Then I remembered, as far as May knew, I'd never been in love. Lucy's smile was sad.
"It's the most wonderful and terrible thing that can ever happen to you," she said simply. "You know that you've found something amazing, and you want to hold on to it forever. And every second after you have it, you fear the moment you might lose it."
I sighed softly. She was absolutely right. Love is beautiful fear. I didn't want to let myself think too much about losing things, so I walked inside.
"Lucy, look at you. Do you like it?"
She reached back, touching the delicate braids.
"It's wonderful. May used to braid my hair all the time, too. She's very talented."
May shrugged.
"What else was I supposed to do? We couldn't afford to have dolls, so I used Ames instead."
"Well," Lucy said, turning to face her, "while you're here, you will be our little doll. Anne, Mary, and I are going to make you look as pretty as the queen."
May tilted her head.
"No one's as pretty as her."
Then she quickly turned to me.
"Don't tell Mama I said that."
I chuckled.
"I won't. For now, though, we have to get ready. It's almost time for tea."
May clapped her hands together excitedly and went to settle in front of the mirror. Lucy pulled her hair up, managing to keep the braids together as she made her bun, putting her cap on to cover most of it. I couldn't blame her for wanting it to stay as it was, a little bit longer.
"Oh, a letter came for you, miss," Lucy said, handing an envelope to me with great care.
"Thank you," I replied, unable to keep the shock out of my voice. Most of the people I expected to hear from were currently with me. I tore it open and read the brief note, its deliberate scratch completely familiar. "America, I have found out belatedly that the families of the elite were recently invited to the palace, and that Father, Mother, and May have left to visit you. I know that Kenna is far too pregnant to travel, and Jared is much too young. I'm trying to understand why this invitation wasn't extended to me. I'm your brother, America. My only guess is that Father chose to exclude me. I certainly hope it wasn't you. We are on the edge of very great things, you and I. Our positions can be very helpful to each other. If any other special privileges are ever offered to your family, you ought to remember me, America. We can help each other. Did you happen to mention me to the prince? Just curious. Write soon. Coda." I debated crumpling it up and tossing it in the trash. I had hoped Coda might be getting over his caste climbing and learn to be content with the success he had. No such luck, it seemed. I threw the letter in the back of a drawer, choosing to forget about it entirely. His jealousy wasn't going to spoil this visit. Lucy rang for Anne and Mary, and we all had a wonderful time getting ready. May's effervescent attitude kept us all in good spirits, and I found myself singing while we dressed. Not long after, Mom came by, asking all of us to double-check that she looked all right. She did, of course. She was shorter and curvier than the queen, but she was every bit as regal in her dress. As we walked downstairs, May clutched my arm, looking sad.
"What's wrong? You're excited to meet the queen, aren't you?"
I asked.
"I am. It's just..."
"What?" She sighed.
How am I supposed to go back to khakis after all this?
The girls were animated and everyone was sparkling with energy. Natalie's sister Lacey was about May's age, and they sat in a corner talking. I could see how Lacey resembled her sister. Physically, they were thin, blonde, and lovely. But where May and I were opposites, personality-wise, Natalie and Lacey were so similar. I would have described Lacey as a bit less whimsical, however, not quite as clueless as her sister. The queen made her rounds, speaking to all the mothers, asking questions in her sweet way. I was in a small group listening to Elise's mother talk about her family back in New Asia when May tugged on my dress, pulling me away.
May, I hissed, what are you doing? You can't act like that, especially when the queen's present.
You have to see, she insisted. Thank goodness Sylvia wasn't here. I wouldn't put it past her to admonish May for something like this, even though May didn't know any better. We made our way to the window and May pointed outside.
Look!
I peered past the shrubs and fountains and saw two figures. The first was my father, speaking with his hands as he either explained or asked something. The second was Maxon, pausing to think before responding. They walked slowly, and sometimes my dad would put his hands in his pockets, or Maxon would tuck his behind his back. Whatever this conversation was, it seemed intense. I glanced around. The women were all still engrossed with the experience, with the queen herself, and no one seemed to notice us. Maxon stopped, stood in front of my father, and spoke deliberately. There was no aggression or anger, but he looked determined. After a pause, Dad held out his hand. Maxon smiled and shook it eagerly. A moment later, they both seemed lighter, and Dad slapped Maxon on the back. Maxon seemed to stiffen a bit at that. He wasn't used to being touched. But then Dad put his arm around Maxon's shoulder, the way he did with me and Kota, the way he did with all his kids. And Maxon seemed to like that very much.
What was that about? I asked aloud.
May shrugged.
It looked important, though.
It did. We waited to see if Maxon had a conversation with anyone else's father. But if he did, they didn't go to the gardens. Chapter 8. The Halloween party was as amazing as Maxon had promised. When I walked into the great room with May by my side, I was stunned by the sheer beauty before me. Everything was golden. Ornaments on the walls, glittering jewels in the chandeliers, cups, plates, even the food. Everything had hints of gold in it. It was nothing short of magnificent. Popular music was playing through a sound system, but in the corner a small band waited to play the songs for the traditional dances we'd learned. Cameras, both for photography and video, dotted the room. No doubt this would be the highlight of Ilya programming tomorrow. There couldn't be a celebration equal to this one. I briefly wondered what it would be like if I was still here at Christmas time. Everyone's costumes were gorgeous. Marley was dressed as an angel and dancing with that guard I ran into, Officer Woodwork. She even had wings that looked like they'd been made out of iridescent paper floating behind her. Celeste's dress was short and made of feathers, with a large plume behind her head, announcing she was a peacock. Chris was standing with Natalie, and they seemed to have coordinated. Natalie's dress had flowers blossoming on the bodice, and her full skirt was fluttery blue tulle. Chris's dress was as golden as the room, and covered with cascading leaves. Guessing, I'd say, they were spring and fall. It was a cute idea. Elisa's Asian heritage was being taken full advantage of. Her silken dress was an exaggeration of the demure ones she tended to favor. The draping sleeves were incredibly dramatic, and I was in awe of her ability to walk with the ornate headdress she was wearing. Elise didn't typically stand out, but tonight she looked lovely, almost regal. Around the room, all the family and friends were in costume too, and the guards were equally dashing. I saw a baseball player, a cowboy, someone in a suit with a name tag that said Gavril Fide, and one guard so bold as to put on a lady's dress. A few girls were near him laughing up a storm. But many of the guards were in the dress version of their uniforms, which was simply pressed white pants and their blue jackets. They had on gloves but no hats, and these features helped distinguish them from the guards who were actually on duty, surrounding the perimeter of the room.
"So, what do you think?" I asked May, but when I turned, I saw she had disappeared into the crowd, already exploring. I laughed to myself as I surveyed the room, trying to find her puffy little dress. When she said she wanted to go to the party as a bride, the kind we see on TV, I had thought it was a joke. She looked absolutely adorable in her veil, though.
"Hello, Lady America,"
someone whispered in my ear. I started and turned to see Aspen, in his dress uniform beside me.
"You scared me."
I put my hand over my heart as if that would slow it. Aspen only chuckled.
"I like your costume," he said jovially.
"Thank you, I do too."
Anne had made me into a butterfly. My dress was tapered from front to back in a fluttering material, edged in black that floated around me. A tiny mask that looked like wings covered my eyes, making me feel mysterious.
"Why didn't you dress up?" I asked. "Couldn't you think of anything?"
He shrugged.
"I prefer the uniform."
"Oh."
It seemed sad to waste a perfectly good reason to be extravagant. Aspen had even fewer opportunities than I did in that department. Why not live it up?
"I just wanted to say hello, see how you were."
"Good," I said quickly. I felt so awkward.
"Oh."
He sounded unsatisfied.
"All right, then."
Maybe after his little speech the other day, he expected more of an answer, but I wasn't ready to say anything yet. He gave me a bow and went off to see another guard who embraced him like a brother. I wondered if being a guard gave him a sense of family, the way the selection had done for me. Marley and Elise found me moments later and dragged me onto the dance floor. As I swayed, trying not to hit anyone, I caught Aspen standing on the edge of the floor, talking with Mom and May. Mom ran her hand over Aspen's sleeve like she was straightening it out, and May was beaming. I could imagine them telling him how handsome he looked in his uniform, how proud his mother must be. He smiled back, and I could see how pleased he was, too. Aspen and I were rarities, a 5 and 6 pulled out of our monotonous lives and placed in the palace. The selection had been so life-changing that I sometimes forgot to appreciate the experience. I danced in a circle with some of the other girls and guards until the music quieted and the DJ spoke.
"Ladies of the selection, gentlemen of the guard, and friends and relatives of the royal family, please welcome King Clarkson, Queen Amberlee, and Prince Maxon Shreve."
The band swelled with music, and we all curtsied and bowed as they came in together. The king was apparently dressed as a king, simply that of another country. I didn't catch the reference. The queen's dress was a blue so deep that it almost appeared black, with glittering jewels across it. She looked like the night sky. And Maxon, comically, was a pirate. His pants were torn in places, and he wore a loose shirt with a vest and a bandana over his hair. To add to the effect, he hadn't shaved in a day or two, and a shadow of dark blonde fuzz covered the bottom half of his face like a smile. The DJ asked us to clear the floor, and the king and queen had a first dance together. Maxon stood to one side beside Chris and Natalie, whispering things to each in turn and making them laugh. Finally, I saw that he was doing a sweep of the room. I didn't know if he was looking for me or not, but I didn't want to be caught staring at him. I fluffed out my dress and stared at his parents instead. They looked very happy. I thought about the selection and how crazy it seemed, but I couldn't argue with the outcome. King Clarkson and Queen Amberlee were suited for each other. He seemed forceful, and she combated that with a calming nature. She was a quiet listener, and he always seemed to have something to say. Though the whole thing should be archaic and wrong, it worked. Did they ever grow apart during their selection, the way I felt Maxon might be growing apart from me? Why had he not made a single attempt to see me in the midst of dating the rest of the girls? Maybe that was why he was speaking with Dad, to explain to him why he'd have to let me go. Maxon was a polite person, so that seemed like something he would do. I surveyed the crowd, looking for Aspen. In the process, I saw that Dad had finally arrived and was standing arm in arm with Mom on the opposite side of the room.
May had found her way to Marley and was tucked right in front of her. Marley held her arm across May's chest in a sisterly gesture, and their white dresses shone in the light. It didn't surprise me at all that they got so close in less than a day. I sighed. Where was Aspen? In a last effort, I peeked behind me. There he was, just over my shoulder, waiting by me as always. When our eyes met, he gave me a quick wink, and it lifted my entire mood. After the king and queen finished, we all crowded onto the dance floor. Guards shuffled around, pairing up with girls easily. Maxim was still standing on the side of the room with Chris and Natalie. I hoped maybe he'd come ask me to dance. I certainly didn't want to ask him. Gathering my nerve, I smoothed my dress and walked in his direction. I decided that I would at least present him with an opportunity to ask me. I made my way across the floor, planning to jump into their conversation. When I got close enough to do that, Maxon turned to Natalie.
"Would you like to dance?"
he asked. She laughed and tilted her blonde head to the side, like it was the most obvious thing in the world, and I breezed past them, my eyes trained on a table of chocolates, as if that was my goal the entire time. I kept my back to the room as I ate the delicious treats, hoping no one would see how deeply I was blushing. Perhaps a half dozen songs in, Officer Woodwork appeared next to me. Like Aspen, he had opted to stay in his uniform.
"Lady America," he said with a bow, "may I have this dance?"
His voice was bright and warm, and his enthusiasm washed over me. I took his hand easily. "Absolutely, sir," I replied. "I should warn you, though, I'm not very good."
"That's fine, we'll take it slow."
His smile was so inviting that I couldn't be worried about my poor dancing skills, and I happily followed him to the floor. The dance was an upbeat one which suited his mood. He spoke through the entire thing, and it was hard to keep up. So much for taking it slow.
"It seems you've fully recovered from me nearly running you over," he joked.
"It's a shame you didn't do any damage," I shot back. "If I was in a splint, I wouldn't have to dance at least." He laughed.
"I'm glad you're as funny as everyone says you are. I hear you're a favorite of the prince, too."
He made it sound as if it was common knowledge. "I don't know about that." Part of me was sick of people saying that. Another part yearned for it still to be true. Over Officer Woodwork's shoulder, I saw Aspen dancing with Celeste. Something knotted in my chest at the sight.
"Sounds like you get along well with most everyone. Someone even said that during the last attack you took your maids with you to the hiding place for the royal family. Is that true?"
He sounded amazed. At the time, it seemed like a completely normal thing to protect the girls I loved, but to everyone else it came across as daring or strange. "I couldn't leave them behind," I explained. He shook his head in awe.
"You're a true lady, miss."
I blushed. "Thank you." I was left gasping for breath after the song, so I took a seat at one of the many tables sprinkled around the room. I drank orange punch and fanned myself with a napkin, watching others dancing on the floor. I found Maxon with Elise. They looked happy as they spun around in circles. He danced with Elise twice now, and still hadn't sought me out. It took a while to find Aspen on the floor, since so many men were in uniform, but I finally spotted him in a corner, talking with Celeste. I watched as she winked at him, her lips turned up in a flirtatious smile. "Who does she think she is?" I stood to go and tell her to stop, but realized what that would mean for both Aspen and myself before I took a step forward. I sat back down and continued to sip my punch. By the time the song ended, though, I was on the move and had situated myself close enough to Aspen for it to be appropriate for him to ask me to dance. And he did, which was good, because I didn't think I could have been patient. "What in the world was that?" I asked quietly, but with obvious outrage in my voice.
"What was what?"
"Celeste was running her hands all over you."
"Somebody's jealous," he sang into my ear.
"Oh, stop it. She's not supposed to be acting like that. It's against the rules." I looked around to make sure no one could see how intimately we were talking, particularly my parents. I noticed Mom sitting and talking with Natalie's mother. Dad had disappeared.
This from you?
He said, rolling his eyes playfully.
If we aren't together, you can't tell me who I'm not allowed to talk to.
I made a face. You know it's not like that.
So what is it like?
He whispered. I don't know if I'm supposed to be holding on or letting go. He shook his head.
I don't want to give up, but if there's nothing for me to hope for, then tell me.
I could see the effort behind him keeping his face so calm, the lingering sadness in his voice. And I hurt, too. Thinking about letting this end brought a stabbing pain to my chest. I sighed and confessed. He's been avoiding me. He'll say hello, but he's been very devoted to dating the other girls recently. I think I must have imagined that he actually liked me. He stopped dancing for a moment, shocked at what I was saying. He quickly picked back up, studying my face for a moment.
I didn't realize that was what was going on, he said softly. I mean, you know I want us to be together, but I didn't want you to get hurt.
Thanks, I shrugged. I feel stupid more than anything. Aspen pulled me in a little closer, still keeping a respectful distance, though I knew he didn't want to.
Trust me, Mare. Any man who passes up the chance to be with you is the stupid one.
You tried to pass me up, I reminded him.
That's how I know, he replied with a smile.
I was glad we could joke about that now. I looked over Aspen's shoulder and found Maxon dancing with Chris. Again? Wasn't he even going to ask me once? Aspen leaned in.
You know what this dance reminds me of?
Tell me.
Fern Talley's 16th birthday party.
I gave him a look like he was crazy. I remembered Fern's 16th birthday. Fern was a 6, and sometimes we got help from her when Aspen's mom was too busy to fit us in. Her 16th birthday party came about 7 months after Aspen and I had started dating. We were both invited, and it wasn't much of a party. A cake and water. The radio turned on because she didn't own any music discs, and the lights dimmed in her unfinished basement. The big thing was that it was the first party I'd been to that wasn't a family party. It was just the local kids alone in a room, and that was exciting. However, it in no way compared to the splendor of what was happening around us now. How in the world is this party like that one? I asked disbelievingly. Aspen swallowed once and spoke.
We danced, remember? I was so proud to have you there in my arms in front of other people. Even if you did look like you were having a seizure.
He winked at me. The words stirred my heart. I did remember that. I lived off that moment for weeks. In an instant, 1,000 secrets that Aspen and I had built and saved flooded my mind. The names we'd picked out for our imaginary children, our treehouse, his ticklish spot on the back of his neck, the notes we'd written and hidden away, my failed efforts in making homemade soap, games of tic-tac-toe played with our fingers on his stomach, games where we couldn't remember our invisible moves, games he always let me win.
Tell me you'll wait for me. If you'll wait for me, Mare, I can handle anything else.
He breathed into my ear. The music switched to a traditional song, and a nearby officer asked for a dance. I was swept away, leaving both Aspen and myself without any answers. The night went on, and I found myself peeking over at Aspen more than once. Though I tried to seem casual about it, I bet anyone really paying attention might have noticed, particularly my dad if he had been in the room. But he seemed more interested in touring the palace than dancing. I tried to distract myself with the party and must have danced with everyone in the room, except for Maxon. I was sitting down resting my tired feet when I heard his voice beside me.
My lady?
I turned to see him.
May I have this dance?
That feeling, that indefinable something coursed through me. As dejected as I'd felt, as embarrassed as I'd been, when he offered me that moment, I had to take it. Of course. He took my hand and walked me out to the floor, where the band was starting a slow song. I felt a rush of happiness. He didn't seem upset or uncomfortable. On the contrary, Maxon held me so close I could smell his cologne and feel his stubble against my cheek. I was wondering if I was going to get a dance at all, I commented, trying to sound playful. Maxon managed to pull me even closer.
I was saving this one. I put in time with all the other girls, so my obligations are over. Now I can enjoy the rest of the evening with you.
I blushed the way I always did when he said things like that to me. Sometimes his words were like single lines of poetry. After the last week, I didn't think I'd ever hear him speak to me that way again. It made my pulse race.
You look lovely, America. Much too beautiful to be on the arm of a scraggly pirate.
I giggled. How could you have possibly dressed to match? Come as a tree?
At the very least, some kind of shrubbery.
I laughed again. I would pay money to see you dressed as a shrubbery.
Next year,
he promised. I looked at him. Next year?
Would you like that? For us to have another Halloween party next October?
He asked. Will I even be here in October? Maxon stopped dancing.
Why wouldn't you?
I shrugged. You've been avoiding me all week, dating the other girls. And I saw you talking to my dad. I thought you might be telling him why you had to kick out his daughter. I swallowed the lump in my throat. I was not going to cry here.
America.
I get it. Someone has to go, and I'm a five, and Marley's the people's favorite.
America, stop,
he said gently.
I'm such an idiot. I had no idea you'd see it that way. I thought you felt secure in your standing.
I was missing something here. Maxon sighed.
Honestly, I was trying to give the other girls a sporting chance. From the beginning, I've really only looked at you. Wanted you.
I ducked my head for a moment, overcome by his deep stare.
When you told me how you felt, I was so relieved that a part of me didn't believe it. I still have a hard time accepting that it was real. You'd be surprised how infrequently I get something I truly want.
Maxon's eyes were hiding something, some sadness he wasn't prepared to share. But he shook it away and continued explaining, starting to sway to the music again.
I was afraid I was wrong, that you would change your mind any second. I've been looking for a suitable alternative. But the truth is...
Maxon looked me in the eyes again, unwavering.
There's only you. Maybe I'm not really looking. Maybe they aren't right for me. It doesn't matter. I just know I want you, and that terrifies me. I've been waiting for you to take back the words, to beg to leave.
It took me a moment to find my breath. Suddenly, all that time away looked different. I could understand that feeling, that it was too good to be true, too good to trust. I felt like that every day with him. Maxon, that's not going to happen, I whispered into his neck. If anything, you're going to realize I'm not good enough. His lips were at my ear.
Darling, you're perfect.
My arm on his back drew him toward me, and he did the same, until we were closer to each other physically than we'd ever been. In the back of my mind, I realized we were in a crowded room, that somewhere my mother was probably fainting at the sight, but I didn't care. For that moment, it felt like we were the only two people in the world. I pulled back to look at Maxon, noticing that I needed to get the moisture out of my eyes to do so. But I liked these tears. Maxon explained everything.
I want us to take our time. After I announce the dismissal tomorrow, that will appease the public and my father, but I don't want to rush you at all. I want you to see the princess's suite. It adjoins mine, actually.
He said quietly. Something about being that close to him all the time made my bones feel weak.
I think you should start deciding what you want in there. I want you to feel completely at home. You'll have to pick a few more maids, too, and figure out if you want your family in the palace or just nearby. I'll help you with everything.
A tiny beat of my heart whispered, "What about Aspen?" But I was so taken in by Maxon that I barely even heard it.
Soon, when it's proper for me to end the selection, when I propose to you, I want it to be as easy as breathing for you to say yes. I promise to do everything in my power between now and that moment to make it that way. Anything you need, anything you want, say the words. I will do everything I can for you.
I was overwhelmed. He understood me so well. How nervous I was about making this commitment. How frightening it was for me to become a princess. He was going to give me every last second he could, and in the meantime, lavish me with everything possible. I had another one of those moments when I couldn't believe this was all happening. "That's not fair, Maxon," I mumbled. "What in the world am I supposed to be able to give you?" He smiled.
"All I want is your promise to stay with me, to be mine. Sometimes it feels like you can't possibly be real. Promise me you'll stay."
"Of course. I promise." With that, I rested my head on his shoulder, and we slow danced through song after song. Once May caught my eye, and she looked like she was about to die with happiness, watching us together. Mom and Dad stood looking on, and Dad shook his head as if to say, "And you thought he was sending you home." Something occurred to me. "Maxon," I asked, turning my face toward him.
"Yes, darling?"
I smiled at the name. "Why were you talking with my dad?" Maxon smiled.
"He is aware of my intentions, and you should know that he approves wholeheartedly, so long as you're happy. That seemed to be his only stipulation. I assured him that I'd do everything I could to see that you were, and I told him you seemed happy here already."
"I am." I felt Maxon's chest rise.
"Then he and I both have everything we need."
Maxon's hand moved slightly and settled low on my back, encouraging me to stay close. In that touch, I knew so many things. I knew that this was real, that it was happening, and that I could let myself believe it. I knew I'd let go of the friendships I'd made here if I had to, though I was sure Marley wouldn't mind losing in the slightest. And I knew I'd let the torch I held for Aspen burn out. It would be slow and I would have to tell Maxon, but I would do it. Because now I was his. I knew it. I'd never been so sure. For the first time I could see it. I saw the aisle, the guests waiting, and Maxon standing at the end of it all. With that touch, it all made perfect sense. The party went on late into the night when Maxon dragged the six of us to the balcony at the front of the palace for the best view of the fireworks. Celeste was stumbling up the marble steps, and Natalie had acquired some poor guard's hat. Champagne was being passed around, and Maxon was celebrating our engagement prematurely with a bottle he'd kept all to himself. As the fireworks lit up the sky in the background, Maxon raised his bottle in the air.
"A toast!" he exclaimed.
We all raised our glasses and waited expectantly. I noticed Elise's glass was smeared with the dark lipstick she'd been wearing, and even Marley held a glass quietly, choosing to sip rather than gulp.
"To all you beautiful ladies, and to my future wife,"
Maxon called. The girls hooted, thinking this toast might be especially for each of them, but I knew better. As everyone tipped their glasses back, I watched Maxon, my almost fiancé, who gave me a tiny wink before taking another swig of champagne. The glow and excitement of the entire evening was overwhelming, like a fire of happiness was swallowing me whole. I couldn't imagine anything strong enough to take that happiness away. Chapter 9. I barely slept. Between getting in so late and the excitement over what was coming, it was impossible. I curled closer to May, comforted by her warmth. I'd miss her so much once she left, but at least I had the prospect of her living here with me to look forward to. I wondered who would be leaving today. It didn't seem polite to ask, so I didn't. But if pressed, I would guess it was Natalie. Marley and Chris were popular with the public, more popular than I was, and Celeste and Elise had connections. I had Maxon's heart, and that left Natalie without much to hold on to. I felt bad because I really didn't have anything against Natalie. If anything, I wished Celeste would go. Maybe Maxon would send her home since he knew how much I disliked her, and he did say he wanted me to be comfortable here. I sighed, thinking of everything he'd said last night. I'd never imagined this was possible. How did I, a man?